What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You caught me tuning there on that one. So, as is our custom here on Porch Talk.
That's it.
Hello, you.
We're about to welcome you.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I convolute everything. When it goes through my filter, it comes out some other way. And I've listened to lots of Porch Talk.
Both for it.
Before I want to say I didn't agree to get interviewed, because I don't agree to nothing. I rarely agree to
Is this anything. An interview? Or this,
It's not even
out.
An interview. But if you know me a lot, you know that I rarely ever give interviews or even get videoed. Or, as a matter of fact, I've recorded whole albums that have never been released. Why is this? I don't really know. Can't explain it. It's not, obviously, I'm not bashful, you know, and if you know me in real life, you know this, but I like to play it off on the integrity of my work, because I like to think that I've got some. Who wants to spend their whole life doing something and think that they just been playing around, you know? I work.
Or who wants to spend their whole life feeling like they've been played around?
Right. I've put great effort into my music, and at great cost to myself and to everybody around me. What do I mean by that? I say this to young musicians and people who want to make it.
Whatever making it looks like, right? Yeah.
And I believe this. If you have the talent to begin with, or if you work hard enough to achieve a level of excellence. Mm-hmm. And those two, sometimes those things add up together and sometimes they don't. You can be successful at that thing, whether it's music or what your thing is. And all you have to do is a single thing, and that is sacrifice everything and everybody you ever loved to that thing.
Cold, hard truth.
That is it. I don't care what your field is. If you are good at it, or you become good at it through hard work, and you also sacrifice everything for it, you might probably make something out of it.
That's the thing about it, right? That's the idea of giving yourself to something.
Yes.
And, I mean, that's why we often say that people are milquetoast, or they ride the track or ride the fence.
Yeah.
You had 1 foot on and 1 foot off.
Yeah, you ain't ever going
to. You need to do 1 foot off, or you need to do 2 feet off or 2 feet on. You either go for it or you burn it. You can't flirt with it.
No. Commitment is a bitch.
Yeah. To put it.
That's the first curse of what I've said, so y'all just go ahead and applaud for that.
Woo!
I did it knowingly, too.
There you go. But the song you're about to share is going to lead into...
See, I would have done started playing, but we didn't got off into the zone here on the fourth hour.
Yeah.
The song I'm about to play is the title track off of the album Fast Moving Something, which was not released. None of the albums that we recorded were quote-unquote released. This one was the closest one to being defined as a release because we sold a bunch of them at shows, okay? And, you know, we bought a bunch through CD Baby or something like that, and we had to do something with them, and we had a little money to pay back on it, and we sold them for $10. And David Lauderdale produced this album. And you can't get it nowhere. If you're lucky to have one, say lucky. If you got one, you got one. If you don't, you don't. I got a few laying around, hidden around here and there. And, of course, I could recreate them, and I may do it someday. Probably will. But we recorded this in his studio over near Porterville. And this was some years ago. I don't do the years. I don't, you know, I got it written down somewhere. Fast Moving Something is the title track. And on this track on the album, it's got I believe an oboe. It's got an oboe on it. Maybe it's a cello. It's got a cello.
Yeah, okay.
quite a bit of difference there. It's got a cello on it.
The name of which,
and if you're the kid that played the cello on Fast Moving Something, let me know. I never found out from David who the kid on the cello was. If you're out there, I want to know. I would like, you are one of the pieces of that puzzle of that album, because I wasn't there for Cello Day. Now I'm telling the secret, because it, whatever, you know. Mm. But I don't know who you are. So, step forward, please. Will the real cello player please stand up?
Perfect.
I'm going to play Fast Moving Something.
You want to close that door before we go for the bugs?
Yeah, I ain't worried about it, but sure.
Perfect. Far, far away.
Makes me crazy. Sunlight makes me lazy. Except when I'm firing on a fast moving something, bound for somewhere outside the border, pushing past people, leaving them something to remember me by. The crowd started rumbling, 'cause moonlight makes me crazy. Summertime, it's my passion, 'cause I like the coolness of midsummer water. And I let my body float down to the bottom, to be close to things that I can't hold on to. But it doesn't matter, 'cause I'm bound to follow the moonlight. Makes me crazy. Freight trains make a rhythm from pushing and pulling and taking and giving. And I like to watch in slow motion and sit on the cars and pretend they're the ocean, 'cause moonlight makes me crazy. In the night I'm a wolf, and I know how to ride on that fast moving silver that floats through the night. And if I can't run, well, I might as well die. This moonlight makes me crazy. Burn my body when I'm gone. You're putting me in your pocket, and you won't be alone. Then have another round on me, boys. Prime up those pistols so y'all make some noise. If the moonlight makes you crazy, 'cause the moonlight makes me crazy.
Yeah. All right, so we've We've opened this up.
We have opened.
Oh, we got to talk about Dave.
I went and got myself a nice cold glass of ice water.
That's it.
From the last break. That's what I've been working with here. Probably if I'd have switched over to booze or something, you wouldn't hear no cracking in my voice. But now I'm telling trade secrets.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of nuance when it comes to Dave, and we're not going to cover it all here. And I'm not asking you to, but I won't, because I believe that was a dynamic time in your history.
It was absolutely dynamic. I mean, Lauderdale, you got people that are known by a single name, you know, Lauderdale, or Dave, whatever, but Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. When people speak in reverence of Lauderdale, there ain't no question what they're talking about. Who they're talking about? David Lauderdale.
How'd y'all meet?
First time I saw Dave, he was still in high school. And I had that band I mentioned before with the guys from Cabin Porch. And we were later called Milestone. We were first called Coonshuck. Why? Because deep in this jungle down here, there's a canal that runs through here with deep banks, and it's called the Coonshuck Canal.
Mm-hmm. Is that where dark water comes from?
No, dark water is there. It's their own story.
Okay.
I don't know. But Milestone was what we played as eventually. And you know, weird thing enough, during that whole band, I never considered to look up what the meaning of Milestone. I just thought it was a cool word.
What's a dope word and meaning?
Oh, yeah. And literally, we were at a milestone in our youth. So, I was with Milestone. We had all that gear I told you about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some kid band, some high school band, needed to borrow some gear for some show. Me and Paul, the bass player, rode out to someone's house, and they had a barn with a hayloft to bring the gear. And we got out of the vehicle, the truck, whatever it was. And I heard this band playing from up there, and I heard this guitar player shredding out. And that was my first introduction to Lauderdale, was that sound of his guitar when he was like 15, 16 years old. I'm like, wow. And there was several other good musicians in that band. Some of which, not Lauderdale, but some of the other ones actually maybe even sat in with Milestone a couple times. But so we let him borrow the PA. There was no conversation. We didn't like bro out or nothing. We were the old dudes, you know. We were 19-year-olds. We didn't bro out when I was 15-year-olds. But we let him borrow the stuff. That was it. Years later, I'm playing in a coffee shop with Bill Lauderdale, David's daddy, who I'd been associated with in the music scene some. I never really considered that it was David's daddy or who that kid was. Bill Lauderdale.
Bill
Lauderdale. David's daddy. He and I had a project one time. And this is back when you emailed people, you know. I emailed Bill and said, that's the pump from outside. If you hear it. Broke the third wall again.
Boom.
So, Bill and I, it'll go.
That's what I like about this show. Call it Porch Talk. Literally, where will we not record?
Yeah, right. Bill and I had a project. I emailed him. I said, hey, I want a project. And he's like, let's do it. And we called ourselves the Levelers.
Oh, yeah.
And we went up and jammed at this coffee house that was real cool. It's this guy from Holland, who might hear this someday, had it, and it was super cool. He recorded things live up there. So I'm playing up there with Bill, and Bill was an amazing pianist. And not only that, he was an amazing artist, like visual art. He did stained glass windows. He taught art for the tribe.
Mm.
And so in call us this guy. I kind of recognize him. I'm like, I think I know that kid, but he ain't no kid. He sits up on stage and starts jamming with us. David Lauderdale. Oh my. Immediately, I understood the power of Lauderdale's guitar work. To call it guitar work is even understating. He embodied guitar playing.
There's few people that I could say that about.
And he's one of them.
And I know what you mean.
Yeah. If you don't know, you don't know. But, like, just throwing a few out there from history.
Because, I mean, let's be real.
Jimi Hendrix embodied
guitar.
Guitar. Okay, Lauderdale embodied it like that.
Because, I mean, if you want to get real, any Tom, Dick, or Harry could learn how to play guitar. But there's a difference between playing guitar and embodying it. It's almost the difference of playing a cover versus making your own music.
Right, right. And so Lardo's jamming now, right? And we're jamming. We played.
Yeah.
And we left, you know, I remember saying, got his number or something, I don't know. And I think I might have even went and bought a cell phone so I could call him, because I didn't do cell phones. But I got one of the flip phones. I called Lardo. Hey, I got a gig at DT Grinders, which is... It was probably called Midtown Grill. It's this place that now it's called Amore. By the way, great Italian food. Love it. A lot.
Good plug.
Yeah, I don't know them from Jack. I just know why I go. I've been there a few times. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it on. So I'm going to play up at Midtown. Lauderdale, I got this gig in Midtown. Yeah, man, I'd love to. What date is it? Tell him. He's like, man, I can't do that. Why not? I'm like, oh, great, okay, he's not going to believe me. It's my grandmother's birthday, he says. All right, you know, I got it.
Whatever.
Yeah. I got it. He went to his grandmother's birthday. And let's see. I think Mississippi Chris Sharp. No, Mississippi Chris played with me a different night, and I think, who played with me? Slick. There's a guy around town we call Slick. Fantastic guitar player, vocalist, entertainer, extraordinaire. So that Lardo couldn't play. And I called up. It was day of the gig, you know. And I'm like, well, I'm going to play by myself. And I was like, man, I don't want to play by myself. I want somebody good with me. I called up Slick. I got his number from somebody. He's like on the back nine or something, literally, playing golf. And Slick, he says, I'll gig it with you. And we went up there. And Mississippi Chris Sharp also gigged it with me one night. We had a tremendous time. And Slick gigs it with me, and we played that show, and we played it right. That's one of my favorite shows. I remember it. Later, though, I had some other gigs somehow. I don't even know. No, there were no more gigs. There were no more gigs.
Tried it.
I don't know why, but next thing I was playing... Go back to Jonathan Parkson and J.D. Irish. Okay, he was playing a duet with Bob Henry. Also, one of the most phenomenal percussionists ever created ever. I know I said that about Scott Walker, but now I'm also saying it about Bob Henry. Now, Bob Henry is... he embodied it. Okay, I'm going to have to use it again.
Mm-hmm.
And he, when a drummer is a band leader, you know they are something special. When they run the show.
No perk.
And he had his own project called Mississippi New Red Sand. And he had had numerous parts and pieces and people, and he moved around with them. And at this time, he had Jonathan. And those two, oh, they were on fire. Jonathan was moving to Montana, where he's originally from. And Jonathan tells Bob, who... Bob and I were in drumline together. He was just an upperclassman. Also, he was in the same line with Scott Walker. He was a bass drum player.
There you go.
And Bob...
full circle.
He tells Bob to call Daniel Sharp. He can... Because Bob at the time was a working musician. That's what he did. For money. And for his passion. He also a great sound engineer. Great live recorder. Like, he can record drums better than anybody I've ever met in the world. He's just that good. So Bob calls me up and is like, maybe Jonathan calls, whatever you're going to play. So I go and do one show with Bob at the Shed House. And I actually have that show recorded. Bob recorded it and gave it to me, and I have it. It's the only show that me and Bob ever did together alone. And I did. I remember I did a Barbara Allen.
That's really dope.
Barbara Allen, you know, in the merry month of May, all the green buds are swelling. Sweet William on his deathbed lay for the love of Barbara Allen. I was doing folk songs with this drummer that literally could have played with the hardest bands in the world to the medium bands. Like, he's, you know, just, you want to talk about punk rock, you want to talk about rock, there is no other.
He's A+.
He is A+. And he's playing behind me with Barbara Allen, this English folk song. You know? Mm-hmm. I did a bunch of Steve Earle that night. I got it all on one recording. I got it in my box computer, you know what I mean? We might just listen to it when we listen to the Combi stuff. We ain't talking about Combi. But anyway.
We ain't even talked about that little dice game you learned in Mexico.
Oh, no. We got no time for that. Oh, we do. We got time.
Save the bread.
Yeah, we got time. If we want to.
Lauderdale.
Let's hang on music.
Yeah.
Well, this is Porch Talk.
Yeah.
Howdy, you. I did it again. So we played the one show at the Shed House.
Yeah.
And previously, you see, Bob and Jonathan had been doing a duet, and they were doing things like Led Zeppelin. Because Jonathan's just that good on electric. And they were doing them to perfection. And now I come in with Barbara Allen. And the guys who own the Shed House, who I later became dear, dear friends with and still am. I remember at the end of the show, they were blown away that we'd just done a light folk thing in their bar. Like,
yeah,
what the heck? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, they went from Led Zeppelin to Barbara Allen in one show.
It's like, yeah.
I don't know about this, guys.
Yeah, it's a little off.
And they're like, we don't know. You know, not like we couldn't come back, because we could always come back, you know. And of course, I did some, you know, it wasn't like I didn't do some Tom Petty and some other stuff. You know, we made it work. When the crowd, there was not a lot of people there that night. When the crowd came in, I did what I had to do to get the bread made, you know.
Yeah.
I made the bread that night. But when nobody was looking, I did the Steve Earle and the Barbara Allen. And Bob was real serious about, like, who he played with. All this stuff. You know, you didn't just show up, bring somebody, none of that. Like, he ran his band himself. And there was no bucking that. And I understood this. I was working for him, you know, when we started. Later, we became something enigmatic. But I remember thinking, we need Lauderdale. And so I invited Lauderdale to our next show there and didn't tell Bob. Because I didn't want to have, I was scared, you know, to have to sell it, you know.
Yeah.
Lauderdale rose in with his guitar and stuff. Acoustic at that, electric. And Bob's like, who's this guy? I was like, that's Lauderdale. He's like, I don't know, man, about people playing, you know. He hadn't heard Lauderdale. I said, it'll be okay. He says, are you sure? He's like, you know, he's like, okay, man, whatever.
Yeah.
I could tell, you know.
Yeah.
And so we broke loose on, could have been The Weight. It could have been Dead Flowers. It could have been anything. And Lauderdale laid into it like a sling blade on the farm. I told that story earlier. Nobody on the radio land knows about the Kaiser blade, and we ain't gonna talk. He laid into it like a Kaiser blade.
Uh-huh. So what that goes is, guys, I'm telling you, and this won't be part of it, but there is a actual Porch Talk that includes some of these side stories, but we haven't released that yet, and I don't know when we will or if we will. But I mean, that just rose into like the story behind Kaiser Blade, right?
That's right.
It's like, it's part of, like, you had to be here.
You had to be here for the Kaiser Blade. I'm sorry, guys. whoever that goes out to, I'm a nice guy.
Yeah,
those people were harmed in the story of the Kaiser Blade.
There was no.
Maybe some feelings were hurt. It's okay.
Yeah, but they needed to be hurt.
Maybe I was a little cowboy. Maybe I was being a little bit of a cowboy.
There we go. It comes. It's full circle. It
comes around. So David's playing.
Yes.
First song. I'll let him get through the. I didn't look at Bob. I let him get through the first verse. We got around the chorus. We got to the lead.
Now you're a vocalist.
I'm singing. That's right. And I let him get into the middle of the lead, and that's when I looked at Bob. I looked around at him at the drums, like asking him, like with my eyes, like, what do you think?
Well, yeah.
He was like jubilant. He was like shook his head like yes, like oh hell yeah. Oh yes, yes.
It is here.
You did it.
Yeah.
Because we had Lauderdale now. Now we were a trio, and the guys that own the bar, oh they loved it. And I'd also pick some more selections that were a little that we didn't. I don't think we might have. We did play Bob Rowland a few more times after I got into some beer a few times. I did a lot of crazy folk stuff. But you know, with Lauderdale, you can play Bob Rowland and it sounds like Led Zeppelin.
I know the type.
You know what I mean?
I know the type.
You can lock. We ended up writing songs on stage that ended up, one of which ended up on Fast Moving Something called Kicking and Screaming. Ended up on Fast Moving Something. We wrote that on stage because we ran out of songs one night and we were like, we don't have anything on the list. And I was like, we don't need a list. We're going to play this song. It's a new one. I'm writing it now. And Lauderdale comes in.
Let's just play.
And we played.
That's right.
And we went a little loud, too.
That's Groove Johnson to me. That's Groove Johnson to me. It's like, I give a lot of props. You know him, and you know him better than I. But I do give a lot of props to Philip and Matt.
Absolutely. Man, we had Lost or Never out here. They recorded several things out here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so good. So good.
The Dark Water stuff?
No, the... I don't even know what they call the Groove Johnson. I think they just adopted the name Groove Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up in a few places, the things they did here, the sound of it and the playing of it. I documented it all, and I have it in my phone, but that's like photos, you know.
Right.
but anyway, back around.
Yeah, back around.
Lauderdale. So we got Lauderdale now. So, and then, of course, we played that bar. Oh, did we play it? And then I'm like, we need a bass player. Yeah. So this time I got together with Bob and David. And I'm like, okay, let's do a bass player. And we found us one. And little did we know, it was we went to this gig at the same bar. And we watched him play. And I just stood back and we listened to him. And everybody's like, okay, yeah, he's good. You know, we'll take him. So I'd actually intended on stealing him from his band.
Yeah.
Just taking him. We're just going to take him.
Yeah.
And to take him, we had brought some... We went out to Bug Chitta. And at the jam, the notoriously famous jam house at Bug Chitta. That's Bob's place. Huh. And you don't get to go there. Nobody gets to go there unless you're invited. And it is, if you ever were to get to go there, you know, you're lucky. And that's where David and Bob and I went out and rehearsed, and he recorded our rehearsal. And it was, and I've got that also. I have. Bob was kind enough to give me a copy of everything that he ever recorded of us, and I appreciate that. And I've just got it in my box. So we took a portable CD player with our rehearsal on it to let the bass player listen to, so we could steal him from his band. Little did we know, when he walked up, I said, look, he just walks right up, and Andy Stewart. Andy, dear friend of mine now, listen to this, I said. And I didn't know him very much at all. I knew him a little bit, because he was always trying to get this 76 Gibson I had, but he couldn't get it. And so I said, Andy, listen to this. And I put it on his head, and he listened to the songs. He's like, oh, that's great, man, you know. Let's jam. That's his key. That's his catchphrase. Let's jam. And I said, well, you want to be in the band? He says, this was our last gig ever. The band's breaking up. I'm about, you know, my band just broke up. That was his last song. Well, we need you to practice Tuesday. Okay. And boom. So Andy played
with us. It all worked out.
Andy played with us a long time. And we did some recordings and we did some, I think we might have even done Red Light with Andy. I don't know. At one point, we did a bunch of recordings with Andy. And then later, as it always happened with New Red Sand, Mississippi New Red Sand, many different players came and went.
Where'd that name come from?
There's a Jimi Hendrix song that references, I believe, Arkansas New Red Sand.
Mm-hmm.
In the lyrics. And Bob borrowed that term and called it Mississippi New Red Sand. So it comes from a Hendrix song in a roundabout way. And there were many other players. Ooh. David and I always remained with Bob. And, oh man. This is one of those asides right there I'm going to skip.
That's fine.
We had a, there's so many epic gigs. Epic gigs. And he could lock a beat. Bob Hendrick can lock a beat. He's a metronome. We called him, me and David with kind of jokingly around behind his back, said he's the metronome.
Yeah.
And one beautiful thing about all Bob's recordings is the drums are pristine. He made sure of that. You can hear.
Oh, he's just perfect.
Perfectly. Not, I mean, not just the playing. I'm talking about the sound of every individual drum.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a whole lot of covers in that band. Obviously, we were making money. You know, we were making money. And we were playing cool covers. You know, we didn't do any junk. We, like, there were songs that we were not doing. And Bob would tell us what those songs were.
Yeah.
You know. And David and I grew into something different. Because one night, it was Christmas. Many things happened on this farm on Christmas. I told you some asides earlier.
Yeah, you gotta. You seem to have a date with Christmas.
The birth of Jesus. Yeah. Although it's probably not the actual day. We'll,
it's not.
Yeah.
Some believe more Easter, but it's neither here or there.
It's neither here or there. And it's Christmas. And I was alone, sitting exactly where I'm sitting right now. Exactly. And Lauderdale shows up. No call, because I don't think I had a phone at that time. I pitched it. I didn't care about it. Lauderdale Rose in here on Christmas. Hey, man. I was thinking about you on Christmas. Wanted to come see you. Okay. He would do that. He would do that all the time in our relationship. He would show.
He'd show up?
And I love that about Lauderdale. He lived here at times in a tent. I set him a campsite up. There's a platform in the woods over there. It's oak platform right now. And when he was going to move back here from Colorado the summer before, I started building him a house to live in. And he came here and he set a campsite up. I had all the tents and stuff. We set him up. I put a cot in there. And he lived in that sucker for a long time. Lauderdale did. And that gave us, and we got up and we wrote stuff. But the night he came on Christmas is what I'm trying to talk about. And at this point, we had never played a single original song that I'd written. And he wasn't necessarily aware that I was writing songs. Because we'd been many months working in a cover band together. And he wasn't even aware. And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm doing a little writing. Oh, really? Well, let me hear it. I said, sure. So I played him this song. It was right after Katrina. Right after. And I played this song I wrote about Katrina called Gulf Coast Line. Carry me down. New Orleans in the spring, make the levee sound. Strong like a young man's dreams, fire up the lamppost, and make them burn real bright and light up the streets, and it'll be sweet. In New Orleans in the spring, old Mississippi, she's seen her share of her rough times, but Katrina was a bad one. All along the Gulf Coast line, it goes like that. It's on the Jimbo album that nobody's ever heard.
Yeah,
and it's one of the things on Jimbo. Circle. And I my voice broke at the beginning of that song. Like, it broke a little bit earlier when I was doing Fast Move or something. It broke a little bit, and I didn't care. You know why? Because Jimbo Mathis told me it didn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
And I told Jimbo after that take of that, because David and I recorded that album straight up. There wasn't no metronome. It was straight up two blasters, right now, live. Period. And so I played him Gulf Coast Line, and oh man, I love that. You got any more? I was like, sure, I've got more. You want to hear some more? So I played more. I played Double Edge of a Sin, which is a song I wrote about my dear friend Creed Ray Graham, who we ain't talk about him much tonight. I mean, that's a whole nother show. He passed a long time ago. He taught me how to play guitar, and he was my brother. He was my blood brother, as a matter of fact. We were childhood friends all the way. We did. He was my bro. You know, he was my go-to. And he's gone. But he ain't forgotten. And he's actually ain't gone. But, so I replayed this song called Double Edge of a Sin about Creed, Ray Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that's the song that I mentioned earlier that's got my former band director in.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And, yeah. Man, he says, dude, we got to record some of that. Yeah, I don't know nothing about that. He's like, well, I'll tell you what. He goes, I'm going to get a Pro Tools I'll handle this.
This is what I'm running on right now.
And he did. He got one. And he calls me over to his house, and we recorded a Gulf Coast line, first thing we ever did. And then we went over to the coach house, which I was mentioning off air, but that's an old stagecoach house that's not far from here that's haunted and powerful. And at the time, I had it was my artistic space, put it that way. And I won't call it my studio, but I said, let's make the studio over there. And all that meant is he came over and set his gear up one day, and we recorded in there. We recorded this song called Dublin, which I wrote with Bo Adams. We've got to run to another one now. Awesome, Bo. Bo and I wrote Dublin right here in this room. And we recorded Strong Swimmer, and we recorded Missed That Train to Memphis. And we might have recorded Red Light. I'm not sure. Four songs. And he says, and I say, like, man, we ought to, you know, we were still in the sand, as we call it. He says, man, we ought to do some duets and go out and play around. What are we going to call ourselves? And together we came and said, we're going to be called Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And Dirty Rotten Scoundrels had a single gig as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And what we did was Bill did us some album art, and we made, like, we went to Office Max and got some blank disc, and Bill printed out Dirty Rotten Scoundrels on them, and he named the little four-song album Coon Shucked with an ED. That was hilarious. That was great.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
And then we took those albums out, like, all 10 of them. I think I've got one. I mean, I have the music, don't get me wrong. But I got the hard album thing somewhere. In this old case I got. And we booked ourselves a gig at Red Hot and Blues. It's this little restaurant in Jackson. As Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And, oh, what a gig it was. Put it this way. We lived up to our name in many ways. As our first duet performance, we went in fully firing and played tons of original music. Because all you had to do with David was, he ain't never had to hear the song. Yeah. All I had to do was come in and play the song, and he didn't ever have to hear it, and he would be on it.
Yeah, he knew.
I didn't mention this, but I mean, he had a degree in music. He had a degree in guitar from USM. He was that good. He could play Mozart, if that's what you ask him to play. And, you know, the little chord structures I use, you know, nothing, you know. So we tore the gig down. And I'm not going to go into it. But I will say this. We agreed the next day that we could never play under the name Dirty Rotten Scoundrels again, because we were too likely to try to emulate and to prove out what we'd call ourselves.
Mm.
And we didn't want to be Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Literally, we didn't want to be Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the people. So we decided not to call ourselves Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, because we had, in fact, did a single gig and been Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah.
And no one harmed nobody in the bar. And I remember that night, one of the worst things was that I don't drink Budweiser, the main thing with the red label on it. It's something I don't do. And that's all they had for some reason. It was all expensive stuff, and that's all we could get. And I had begrudgingly drank Budweiser that night. I blame it on that. But we decided, okay, well, we got to have a new name. And Dave was like, well, you come up with a name. So I thought, naming bands is actually something I do in my spare time. I have names, you know, I'm good at it. I say that. But we decided to call it All Around Hounds, all right, with an H. And now later it'll be problematic because everybody will say All Around Town. No, All Around Hounds. Like All Around, there's the All Around Cowboy. There's an old song about the All Around Cowboy. Well, All Around Hounds. You know, we're just right on. Dogs on the porch. And also we decided that we would be a duet, but at some shows we would bring in percussionists, keyboard players, you name it, whatever we wanted, and that each time that someone played with All Around Hounds, they would become one forever. And ultimately, and we would tell them this, okay, you're not honorary, you're an All Around Hound now. Even though they may never play with us again, they may play with us 100 times. So anybody that we ever played with became an all-around hound, including many, many people. And like Adam Box. You know Box?
I don't.
Oh, well, he's cool. He's amazing. Yet another. We've been blessed with some drummers, let me tell you what. He's another one of them. Box plays with a well-known top chart country rock awesome band who I'm not going to get into start hearing the sound of the names drop, you know.
Yeah.
I sometimes ask myself if I'm like just trying to get somebody else's fame or whatever, because I got to play with this awesome guy. But he's in a real successful band that has music on the radio and wins awards and plays on, like, for instance, like one time we had a real show we needed to play with All Around Hounds. I'm like, Box, man, he booked it. We're gonna book it with us because we played a lot with him. And he got up with me and he's like, man, I can't play that show and I'm so sorry. I was like, well, why the hell not? He's like, well, I got a gig. We're playing on VH1. You know, maybe it was MTV. It was something huge. Maybe it was the Grammy.
Right on.
Well, I guess if you got to have an excuse, and it ain't your grandmother's birthday, if you're going to play on VH1 on some live thing, then we'll let you go.
We'll excuse
you. We'll just let you go. Okay. Yeah. But he was an all-around hound. Chris Etheridge. You know Chris.
Yeah, I know that name.
Chris, he used to come to the Echo, and he played with us on some occasions. He was an all-around hound. Chris is the bass player on The Road Again by Willie Nelson. He's the one that played on that track. And Chris and I got to hang out. You know, I'm not trying to capitalize because there's many people that were way good bros of Chris. Chris and I were good bros. And we sat out back of the Echo and had many deep conversations. And he would tell me about Graham and the Flying Burrito Brothers, which he was a member of.
Mm-hmm.
And he said many complimentary things about my songwriting and about my style and association with Graham. And he was an all-around hound. And one time he says, you know, he's like, yeah, I played with the Doors. I was like, you kidding me? Come on, they didn't have a bass player. He's like, yeah, well, on the album, he goes, on a couple albums, you know, they brought me in. And I'll be honest with you, I came home and Googled it. I'm like, what? I never considered it. Bam. There he is. So all-around hounds had a lot, and the list can just go. I'll just keep on going that list.
All right,
I won't. So that was the concept, and we ended up having a wonderful concept band out of that.
Is that where the like guild foreman in the Shelby County came from?
Definitely not. Remember, we'll revisit and loop around to the Mississippi Sound Co-op where I played Red Light with Jimbo Mathis in the green room.
Yeah.
The concept of that sound co-op is what got my mind working on the guild, and we were called the Association to begin with. And so the Mississippi Sound Co-op got me motivated and inspired to help start the Neshoba County Musicians the Association, which later became the guild. And by all means, I was not an island there. Like, there were many of us that started that thing. It just happens to still be rolling today. Philip is the president. You know, we got a 501(c)(3), whatever you call it. You know, we got a tax ID number. We're a nonprofit. We went through all of those things that you have to go through to get that. That's a side right there.
Okay.
Yeah, that is not where the guild came from. But the guild is when we were doing all that stuff with the VFW. I told you we were doing things.
Right.
It was through the guild.
Yeah.
And like at that time, we would have some afternoons. We'd have lots of younger people come out in the afternoon, and we would teach. You might want to call it teach, I don't know, whatever. We'd inspire. And I would talk about songwriting, and we would break up into groups and talk about guitars, and I would talk about many of the things we talked about, and all those people would be in the guild band, and they would move through it one at a time. Which sort of, you know, I guess you can now put it that way, All Around Hounds was sort of a prototype for something like that.
It kind of fit that. And I don't know if
but
that
now
was...
the hounds, you know, we were. I don't know. We're not like we're choosy or nothing, but we drew a lot of good talent.
Yeah.
And then David and I ended up recording the album Fast Move. Not recording the album 13 Outside the Wire, over at Timberview Lodge, over at Timberview, and Mississippi Chris Sharp produced that, and you know, that's out there. That would never released. You know. But we did 13 songs called 13 Outside the Wire. And we also did Fast Moving Something. We did Raised in a Barn, also not released. That was the Raised in a Barn was a Jimbo thing with Justin. And then, of course, Lauderdale and I co-wrote tons of stuff that's just in my notebooks.
In the ether.
Yeah, and I have got a whole bunch of DVDs of our dear friend Tom Vervinsky recorded of us live, and he would record on a VCR camera, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he would come back next week and bring you the DVD that he bounced.
Yeah.
So I always knew when Tom come in that it's the time to play the songs that David and I had never recorded. So the wealth of unknown All Around Hound songs at our shows are on those those discs. Mm-hmm. Like, I set out to write the perfect cowboy song one time, and I wrote one called Cowboy's Life. And that's on there. Evil Expelled. Another look off the cliff I fell. Another scratch on my wounded face. Another line that I can't trace. That's on there. And a whole lot more. Lauderdale. Mm. And Lauderdale didn't just play with me. Lauderdale played with me. He would go and play with other people. Too. You know, he's
a hired gun.
He and I were solid forever. Yeah. Until the end. But he would absolutely be a hired gun. He was, in fact. He would go and he could execute it. And he could go and play with anybody. And he would all the time. But he would always play with me. And I've got a video, and the only place it exists ever anywhere is on my phone. And a few weeks before he passed, he came out here, and we recorded it, and we did a few songs, including one that's never been released called Frog Level. It's a murder ballad. And it's in my phone, and I really need to do something with it, like post it up somewhere in our secret site. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do something with it. And we also did Fast Moving Something, and we talked a little bit, and it was fun. And that was like the first week of the pandemic or something. He came out here. And I was like, we're socially distanced, you know. Don't nobody think that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I've got that. So much to talk about Lauderdale. I don't even know where to start.
I think we've got a good place to pin it now.
Okay.
I just have one question left with Lauderdale. With all the music that was made, recorded, unreleased, and as you spoke about, like, the videos and all, do you think there's a right time for it? All right, why are you holding it?
I'm overwhelmed with a lot of things, and musically speaking, you know. And I'm not holding it. I'm not withholding it.
Okay. I want to be careful with the way I...
No, I understand what you're saying. It deserves air. And but Lauderdale, now that we're talking about it, he had a whole project going with Travis Allard on his own. With albums worth of music of spiritual stuff was the last thing he did professionally. Now Allard has all this, and he has got an upcoming release of all of that Lauderdale stuff that was a spiritual album that Lauderdale was doing and did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did it and it's done, and so that is yet to come out.
Yeah.
And by come out, it's like, what does that mean? What does bring it out mean? Because that means post it on the internet, you know.
That's exactly nobody what it
to,
means.
Nobody to look at, or everybody to look at. I know that. But
I think you said it right both ways. Is for no one to ever see and for everyone to see.
Right.
And it sounds opposite, but that's exactly what it is. But the point would be, it lives eternally. It'll be on the
wall.
On the wall.
On the fridge.
So to speak.
Yeah.
And if anyone was to happen to search and was looking for it, because that's what we're looking for here, right?
Right.
Is this was the journey to Philadelphia. This was learning about who Daniel Sharp was, and this is a story we've been telling for over 4 hours.
It's been right? that long. We did say we're going to the fourth.
Which
hour.
Is yeah, and I was like, we might go into a fifth. I don't know, but I don't care. I mean, this is what I made this day like for. Yeah, we are winding down, but that's the point. Is I don't want that stuff to just sit on a bookshelf
or
in a crate or lost or never.
Yeah. I don't either. I don't intend for that to happen. I have every intention of doing something, placing it in the correct spot. It will be placed. As a matter of fact, I'm plugging nothing, but if you accidentally cruised around YouTube and searched a bunch of the stuff I talked about, you might accidentally find some secret stuff I put up on there that I ain't told nobody about.
There you go.
I'm not plugging any of that. If you care enough about it to even care about All Around Hounds, you might type that into YouTube one day and just see what happens. And I'm not telling you to.
There you go.
You know, it could be there. Right now, there could be stuff that you didn't hear.
And, man, you've been so good. You shared 4 songs. We've done 4 hours. And I want to put the pen down right now, and I want to get back to just hanging and just enjoying Mississippi with you. Let's wait around, and we'll get back together again when the time's right, right?
When the time is right, I will tell the underside of all of those stories.
There you go. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for the time, and thank you for your hospitality.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alan, for having me on Porch Talk. I'm glad we did it. And thank you all. If anybody out there actually listens to this entire interview, thank you.
I'm going to break it down into sections.
Okay.
I think it's going to be 4 parts.
Okay, if anybody listens to all 4 parts of this interview, congratulations, because you have achieved something that maybe others could not achieve just listening to me banter.
Hey,
you want some more? Well, I'm just getting started. I've only begun to fight.
I'm telling you, there has been way more what we call on the porch than was on the mic. And, until that time is ripe, that time is not ripe. And we're out of here.
Bang, bang, bang.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.